All right, guys, welcome back to another edition of This Week in College Football, brought to you by CFB Talk Daily. Today is Monday, June 1st. We have a familiar face back in, I guess you could say, the booth. Mike, welcome back.
It's good to be back, guys.
We decided we wanted to bring back a third member, and we said, who else? But you know, Mike knows the system, knows the way we go about things, so it's a smooth transition. So, Mike, welcome back again.
Thank you.
So the first thing we're going to talk about on today's episode is something that kind of gets a little home with John. John, if you want to explain what happened with your good friend Luke Hill, for anyone who doesn't know.
All right. First of all, I'd like to socially distance myself, Hill. But before I get into that, Mike, welcome back.
Appreciate it.
So Luke Hill, not great. He was arrested for a few felonies, I believe 8 or 9. He was shooting at a University of Rhode Island basketball commit. Allegedly shooting at a University of Rhode Island basketball commit. And, it's unfortunate all the way around because, you know, things lead to you to do that and you make stupid decisions when you're young. But also, just to shed some light, apparently Mario Cristobal told him in February that he wouldn't be accepted at Oregon and they never sent him his admission papers to the school.
So they dodged the bullet literally before it almost kind of came around and bit them in the ass a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, so we're actually going to stay with troubled recruits. This one isn't as, I guess, deadly. This isn't as traumatic a situation. It is in its own right. But so Antonio Alfano, a local guy to us. He's from Rahway, New Jersey. At one point was the number one player in the country. Goes down to Alabama. A lot of reports were out there were saying that he was lazy, didn't really adjust to the college life. And then I know we had some family things going on. I think there was a passing in the family. So he then transferred to Colorado. And then it seems as if things have just gone downhill since his arrival at Colorado. I know he was suspended. And now it appears that he is not enrolled in classes. So he is once again back on the market.
Yeah,
I mean,
so,
go ahead, John.
All right. Well, just to shed some light on this, there's reportedly been stories about him for a while that he was, not necessarily the greatest kid off the field. We got some sources that told us this. And also, one of the podcasts I listened to for 247 Sports said that he was actually so, troubled off the field that when he was being recruited, one of Penn State's current commits at the time said, if you let him commit to the school, I'm decommitting. And I believe a few other players said that as well. So, that's interesting. And also another person told me, trusted sources, these guys are big writers. He said that Rutgers even stopped recruiting him at one point.
I mean, I don't know. It's tough because it is a tough family. He did have a passing of his grandmother. But Nick Saban even reached out to him multiple times while he was still at Alabama that I read and mentioned that he was offering therapy sessions for him. He was trying to get him counseling, make sure he was still in class. He was always checking on him, but Alfano never responded. So what Saban ended up saying is you just got to presume that the guy quit. So there's nothing that he can do unless Alfano is willing to accept some help.
Yeah, see, that's interesting. Like, what I've learned recently is that Saban's, a really good person. Like, apparently, so when Jalen Hurts announced he wanted a transfer, he was originally going to go to a different school, not Oklahoma. And it was right after the Oklahoma game he told Saban. And Saban told them, Jalen, we just played those guys. Like, if you have 1 year to raise your stock as much as possible, go play for them. They're the best offense in the country.
Exactly. And they just had their quarterback leave in Kyler Murray to the draft. So that back-to-back quarterbacks going number one in the draft, that was probably the best spot for him, which obviously it was.
Yeah, but I mean, that just shows you, those are, guys that play, Oklahoma, Alabama, they're kind of in the same tier a little bit right now. So for Saban to say, hey, go there, I feel like that's, it's more than football to him, kind of.
Yeah, I think that kind of speaks to the relationship that he had with Jalen. Because, I mean, there are, you see a lot of stories now with Saban coming out, kind of speaking his character. Like, a guy I think about all the time, when I hear stories like this is Dean Smith from North Carolina. Like I read a story that he, when he passed away, he put money aside so that every single one of his former players on Valentine's Day gets money to take their significant other out to dinner on him. Like, that's just a little thing. So like something like that makes it so, you know, this isn't a coach and a player relationship. This, you know, him saying to Jalen, you know, go play at another top tier program where we have a chance to play next year and you'll be under center. That kind of shows that he didn't just see him as a player. He saw him as, you know, I guess a friend, someone who he wanted to give some good advice to, maybe even a son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice thing to see. So the next thing we're going to get into, we're going to stay on quarterbacks, going from Jalen Hurts to another quarterback, JT Daniels. A couple weeks ago announced he was transferring USC. Just announced earlier this week, maybe even a couple days ago, that he was going to the SEC to play at Georgia. What do you guys think about that landing spot for him?
John, you can take this one first.
All right. I was going to say you can go first on this one, but no problem. So I actually don't think we see JT Daniels play at all this year. And barring an injury, I think Jamie Newman will be the starter. I think the way Georgia wants it to play out is right now they have a five-star quarterback, Brock Vandegrift, committed. So I think this year they want to start Newman for his last year eligibility, then redshirt Vandegrift and start Daniels the next year, and then start Vandegrift as a redshirt freshman the year after. So I think this is a really good like bridge transfer and very good thinking ahead by Georgia.
So John, I just want to bring this up real quick. I know because you just mentioned Vandegrift. It's actually a perfect segue into what I had to say. I didn't know if you saw what him and his father actually came out. I guess someone asked him about the transferring. Did you see what they said about JT Daniels transferring in?
I did not. You're about to break some news to me.
So they actually the reaction was that he values competition. You know, he actually was quoted saying, the father said, it wasn't like we were trying to go to Southern Missouri or UTEP. We were choosing among the best program in the country, and you're going to play against the best. That's just part of it. And I think that kind of quote really shows the difference between, you know, a guy like Brock Vandegrift, who has that kind of mentality, like, if I want to start, I got to, you know, if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man, type of thing, compared to maybe a, you know, let's just say Tate Martell-ish mentality, where you see someone come in who's better than you and you get up and run and leave.
Yeah, I mean, Martell was a little different, though, because his eligibility was, like, starting to, I mean, run out a little bit. So I guess you start to panic a little. Also, Vandegrift, the most Daniels could be there is 1 year. So, like,
yeah,
the most you're going to have to do is lose sit 1 year, which isn't really...
I thought he medically redshirted this past season when he tore his ACL.
Yeah, but so you keep your regular redshirt because he medically redshirted.
Yeah, okay.
And also, I was saying Vandegrift for redshirt, not Daniels. Yeah, I think Daniels will just sit this year.
I mean, he's coming off that horrific knee injury. That was a scary injury last year. But obviously, he has this possible another full year depending on when college football starts up again. Due to this coronavirus, but who knows? This could be another QB coming in because they are obviously replacing Jake Fromm, who obviously went to the draft. So this could work out. As John stated, this could be a good branch over, I guess you can call it, or layover, whatever you want to call it, to the future for them. So they got a couple of good quarterbacks here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I think that the writing was kind of on the wall for him. I thought that the writing was on the wall for him to transfer out of USC after the 100%. Utah game. Especially the Utah game when Slovis started that game. And you know, I think he threw for like almost 400 yards, maybe over 400 yards. Slovis kind of solidified himself as the man for the next couple years for them. So I thought that he was on his way out after Slovis came in and performed.
Oh, definitely. Slovis had a great year.
He did.
Not expecting to do anything, really.
For a three-star, I think USC was like his first and one of his only Power 5 offers. Little-known fact.
Yeah, he's a hit.
So the next thing we're going to slide into, Mike kind of brought it up talking about the coronavirus. A lot of these schools have announced their plans for the fall. Some schools, like I believe San Jose State and Monmouth, already came out and said that they will be doing online classes for the fall. And the reason I bring up those two schools in particular is San Jose State, I think Mike said week three, plays Penn State, and Monmouth week one plays Rutgers. So we're thinking about the kind of the effect that the online scheduling and online classes would have on a football season where, you know, you got to travel. Like, you know, so I'll let you guys branch into this more before I start rambling on.
All right, Mike, you can go first.
All right. So there, from what I've read and what I've heard, this could have been updated since then. There have been six California schools that have already committed to online schooling in the fall semester. San Jose State being one of them. They don't know how they're going to do the sports yet. My older brother actually is he's my inside source. I'll give him up. My older brother, who knows nothing about sports whatsoever, he works for a company and they run a lot of finances. So a lot of he works with the NCAA with financials. And what happened is that they're talking about extending their season into the spring, because most of the revenue that comes with college sports and mainly football is through attendance and ticket sales. So they're looking at this for the dollar. Obviously, a lot of fans are looking at this for the passion and the love of the game. So it'll be interesting to see how these schools will and the NCAA responds to what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because we've already seen Michigan's president come out and say if there's no on-campus instruction, there won't be college sports. So I think that kind of makes it a little more difficult because how can you have one team and one program saying we're not going to have sports? You're going to hold up the whole thing.
It's not like a small program either. Obviously,
it's a historic
program. Yeah.
And then how about Michigan State's athletic director said that they're confident they're going to play football. So that was pretty much like, if you guys don't want to play, we're still going to play.
Chalk that one up as a win, I guess, as a forfeit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rutgers going to beat Michigan again.
There it is. Rutgers still won't, not Rutgers, Michigan still won't be able to get past Ohio State either.
Yeah, I just think that I see this as a really tough situation to put the NCAA in. Because of the finances and how much money they make. I mean, if you look, let me pull up the list right now. I mean, the amount of money that these schools make is crazy. So let me actually pull it up.
Not every school, though.
Well, yeah, like, you know, the bigger schools obviously make a lot more, like the Texases and the Alabama. Like, I think Texas last year was $92 million.
Which is absurd. It is absolutely absurd.
Oregon, something like that, too. It was like 80 million or something.
Oregon, yeah. So, but like a lot of these schools, they fund other programs based off of this. So, I mean, you're going to be put in a situation where if you can't get that $92 million in, you know, if you're Texas, well, Texas makes the most by far. But, you know, let's say you're Notre Dame and you're losing $54 million. You're not getting any conference affiliation money for football, so you're going to lose out on that. You know, some of these schools are going to have to start thinking, where are we going to cut corners?
Yeah, I mean, some schools already have, like Akron cut men's track, ODU cut wrestling, a few other schools too are starting to cut. Like
Bowling Green State already cut their baseball team, and their coach has been there for 30 plus years. He's been their head coach for 30 years, and one day he wakes up and gets a phone call that they cut the baseball program. So Bowling Green cut men's lacrosse and men's baseball. So a lot of these other kids are looking for new schools at this rate, and it's all because of this.
Yeah, and then like the bottom tier teams that go and play during Cupcake Week, and, you know, they get paid $500,000 to go play against Alabama and go play against Michigan. You know, like some of those FCS teams who do this, that's how they fund all their athletics. So now they're going to lose out on money there. And there's not nearly as much money in FCS as there is in FBS. So now those schools are going to get hurt by it. So I think this is a tough situation to put the NCAA in. I think that they are going to do whatever they can to get people inside the stadium just so they can get that revenue flowing in.
They're going to have to do something and think of something soon because a lot of teams want to get their spring workouts in, their summer programs getting going.
Yeah, so. you can't be into August and then say, all right, it's August 15th. Everyone go back. We're going to play in a week and a half.
Well, it seems like a lot of the conferences, guys are getting back on campus early June. Well, a lot of the schools. I know Rutgers isn't yet. They're thinking late June. But I've seen a lot of Ohio State. I think Georgia was all early June.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I got an update a couple hours ago saying that Power 5 schools are asking to speed up when they can get an answer about when they can go back and what are the sanctions, what are the limitations that they can do, like because of the close contacts and everyone's coming from across the country.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that. Last thought on this is I think it was Paul Feinbaum. He said that people think that the NCAA isn't going to govern this and they're going to let conferences and ADs do it themselves.
I mean, but how are you going to do that when you're playing a ton of games out of conference? Like what Matt said earlier, it's you're playing against these – you got the cupcake week, so are the conferences going to have to negotiate with one another again about how to play this? Or are you going to have to make up a whole new schedule of just playing teams in your conference?
Yeah, I mean, probably something like that, a modified conference schedule. But, I mean, that's just going to be a shit show.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing, because you just brought that up, and that kind of makes me think, like, you know, like week one or week two, we have Ohio State, Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know, how would that work? You know, that's obviously going to be a big money grab. That's going to be a primetime game. You're going to have a lot of people tuning in. You might get game day there. You know,
well, I can tell you the theory with that game. The popular theory seems to be flip the home and home because it's at Ohio State next year. Mm-hmm. And so far, I mean, Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, said that he's not sure if he would like to do that, but I believe he said he'd listen to it. So it'd be at Ohio State this year, Oregon next year.
Yeah, and that's pretty smart. That makes sense.
And it also all depends on each state saying, okay, you can have sports going on, because New Jersey just stated, Governor Murphy a couple days ago, I believe, said that pro teams can start practicing again in New Jersey. But what if, say, Ohio isn't ready to go, or Indiana is not ready to go, or California is not ready to go?
Well, I feel like New Jersey is like one of the slowest states so far. Like, well, doing everything.
Because New Jersey and New York has been the biggest hit. But yeah. California is already shut down for until late June, I believe.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on from this because we've been on for like 10 minutes.
All right, so the next thing we're going to get into is we're all kind of thinking about if we could implement a rule that could drastically change the landscape of college football, what would it be? So, John, I'll let you start with this one.
All right, well, for me, you guys should think this is a little crazy, but so my rule has to do with recruiting, and it is that the NCAA – the coronavirus and the financial problems for all the schools, to make it fair, you can only recruit kids inside your home state.
Oof.
See, now, because I want to change the landscape. So think, like, Oregon, school would be kind of toast. There's some talent in Oregon, but you wouldn't be getting these kids from all over. I mean, Ohio State, you don't be getting Ohio kids. Like, it'd be tough, man. Like,
Texas would be loaded. Texas California would be absolutely insane.
And like the Florida schools.
Yeah, the top five would be like, because this goes back to the conversation we have with recruits, like, you know, where do you say your state is in college football and, like, you know, recruiting high school talent. You know, top five would be Florida, Texas, Georgia, California, New Jersey. And I think North Carolina is a pretty hot spot.
Is it just a ton? Yeah,
I mean, it'd be crazy. I'm trying to think what other schools wouldn't be that good. I mean, like, Wisconsin would be kind of garbage. Like,
Wisconsin would have the biggest offensive line you could ever think of.
And then
you'd have, like, the faster offensive. You'd have the fastest offensive lineman you've ever seen playing running back.
Yeah.
And then think about, like, in-state recruiting.
Oh, my God. It
like,
would be
Florida and Florida State.
Yeah, it'd be crazy, honestly. But that was mine. I thought it was something interesting, you know. So, Ben, Dad, what's your yours?
Rutgers would be absolutely loaded.
Yeah, Rutgers would be pretty good.
And a talent that's in New Jersey? Oh, my God.
All right, so Mike, let's hear yours, because I'll go last, because mine's pretty crazy.
So I was going, I have two ones, two of them I was considering. The first one was the down by contact rule. I mean, it's a simple rule that you can fix. The NFL does it. I like not being down by contact, because if you get the wide open field and you tripped over your own feet, I feel like you should be able to get up and go. But the other one that I really liked was, obviously you see in the NFL that they're kicking extra points from the 15-yard line now, or around there, I believe it is the 15. And colleges are still doing the chip shots from the 2-yard line. So what I really, really liked was how the XFL did their extra points, I guess you could say. Either you could go for 1, 2, or 3. Really enjoyed that. I thought it was phenomenal how they did that. It kept the game so interesting. You can have a 9-point swing right away, which would lead to less onside kicks, as a lot of, like, the NFL is getting rid of now. So I think that would be a good way to shake it up.
No, I actually like both of them. I feel like the first one needs to happen. It's, like, long past. And the second one, that'd be interesting, because there's a lot of leads that, like, you'd be able to make a comeback a lot easier.
Oh, exactly. Like, if you're down 9 points, it's technically only one possession. Like, in the NFL or college football or any other football league other than the XFL, you're down 9 points with 2 minutes to go in the game. You score a touchdown, great. Now you got to go get the ball back. You got to go for an onside kick, and obviously a lot of injuries take place on an onside kick. That's why the NFL wants to get rid of them. So if you can give these teams these opportunities to get 9 points on a single drive, I think it would reduce a lot of things.
Yeah, I think that's kind of fun, because, like, if you see a team going into the fourth quarter, let's say down 18 points, you know, that's a 3-possession game. In the XFO rules, it's only a 2-possession game, really, if you go for that 3-point point after. So that'd be pretty fun, too, because, I mean, you can get touchdown, defensive stand, touchdown, and that's, you know, 8 minutes, you're in the game. You're back in the game.
And everyone loves college overtime. So if you can make an 18-point game a 2-possession game in college, it would be absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So I like that.
I have two rules. My first one, I'm going to dabble into the XFL also real quick. They had the double forward pass rule, which I thought was kind of unique and cool, where the first pass, it doesn't have to – I'm trying to think of how to describe it. If you're doing something like a screenplay or something, you don't have to throw it behind the line of scrimmage. I'm trying to think of how to word this.
You can go forward and back, basically.
Yeah. But yeah, so the XFL, theirs was you can go forwards and back, but that second pass has to be made behind the line of scrimmage also. I think in the style of football that we see in some of these conferences, especially the Big 12, a rule like that, like, could you imagine an Oklahoma offense where you could just rattle the ball all over the field?
Also, like, I mean, imagine in the conferences with, like, a bigger skill gap, like the Sun Belt action. Think what they could do with a double pass.
Could you imagine Maction?
Oh, boy.
With the double. I mean, we've seen cartwheels on the line.
Yeah, linemen doing cartwheels to distract other players.
Never works, but it's unique.
But now we can see the double forward pass. Like that would be fun. Like, I feel like we wouldn't see that in your traditional Power 5 versus Power 5 like team. Like, you might see it in the Big 12. Like, I think that'd be a Big 12 thing, but you wouldn't see it in like a Big 10 game. But you probably see it in early season games when, like, you know, a mid-major goes in to try and beat up on a Power 5 school just to throw some trick play in there. I think that'd be a little exciting.
Oh, of course.
So my second rule, This one's a little extreme. I think I may have said it on the podcast a while ago. We've talked about this. So it revolves around punt return. And actually just punting as a whole. One person on the field, it's randomized, and no one knows who it is, gets a knife. And so if you're on the return team,
you told me about this.
You can just cut everyone who's trying to get your guy, but you can't kill anybody. All right,
I have a modification. No.
You don't think that would change the landscape of college football?
Dude, you had a guy that committed to Oregon, who just got charged with attempted murder.
You can think of how good those 2000 Miami teams would have been.
I have an idea. No, ditch that idea, the knife, and how about you could tape your arm up as much as you want, one guy, so you could have a club of, like, athletic tape.
I mean, like, everyone says, like, the most, like, the scariest position is being a punt returner, like, because you got people running at you. Now, you have no idea if when you catch that ball, you're going to get stabbed in the ribcage, though.
Okay, you just said not to kill anyone. You're going to have you have guys that are getting charged with attempted murder, and you're going to give them a knife on the field and say, go do what you got arrested for, but because now it's legal.
I never said it. I never thought of the legality of it, and I kind of thought
a club. No, nothing. You could just, like, that way you could form an arm bar. That's what it is. You could form an arm bar on the kickoff, so you can make a wall.
But if you can do that now, how about we go a little further into it? Another coin flip, and the team who wins gets to do it.
That's a great one.
Give the opposing team shields.
Yeah, like, you know how, like, when you're in the pool, everyone links chains together, so you go across the pool, like a chain, whatever, like a chain, I guess people call it. But, like, it's a chain of just clubs, and people are just standing there, and on the return team, they just sprint down the field. So now the defending team either has to try and battle through it, or they're going to try and crawl under it. Maybe you got some little kicks going in there. Less penalties, too.
You just want, remember that opening scene from not the opening scene, but the one kick return scene from The Longest Yard with Adam Sandler. You just want that. Flying drop kicks and just punching each other. That's what I'm picturing right now.
Like, there's no penalties on kick returns if we're going to do that. Like, you can't have people running around with a knife.
Kill each other.
Could you imagine there's a guy running down the field with a knife and the ref was like, holding on the receiving team?
Mike is appalled by this idea. He's just like, oh my God.
And the other thing I'm picturing, you guys remember that little video of the little kid running around the pool? And his mom asked, what do you have? And he goes, a knife!
Yeah, like the offensive line, the one kid's not in the 3 points or the down in the stance. And he's like, yo, why aren't you getting down? He just lifts up his sock and there's a shank sitting there.
Or how about when guys go in a 3-point stance and they have their offhand just dangling? They just have a shiv in that hand. They're just ready to go. And that offensive lineman's just like, shit.
Yeah.
So I told you that I would have one rule that is crazy. The other one, the double forward pass, isn't as extreme as that one.
Yeah, it's cool, yeah.
As extreme. You're talking for assault and attempted murder being legalized in a football game with 18-year-olds.
Yes. I'm absolutely condoning that. That would be hysterical.
Oh my God, dude. Go to medieval times.
All right, so let's get back to reality a little bit. So obviously ESPN just aired the 10-part series of the Dream Team with the Michael Jordan Bulls teams. So we tweeted out earlier in the week, 9 minutes before Brett McMurphy did, just saying. Just throwing that out there. What college football team do you think would make a good candidate for a Last Dance documentary series? Not saying he stole our tweet. Just saying that
he stole the tweet.
The wording was very close to exactly what we put out.
All right, so I'm gonna go first.
You guys have all yours set out, so I'll let you guys go first.
All right, so in the 2000 national championship, Miami was kind of snubbed, so they didn't make it. They were, ranked third, ranked third or second, and didn't get into the game. So. The next year, they go win the national championship in 2001, and this team was loaded. The roster was crazy. I mean, the players, there's so many good players on this team. Ken Dorsey, Quentin Portis, Andre Johnson, Jeremy Shockey, Jonathan Vilma, Ed Reed. This team is loaded. It also has, I believe it should, Vince Wilfork is on here, and there's one more player. Yeah, Sean Taylor is a backup safety on this team. So, thing I wanted to talk about with them is they basically blew out everyone they played. So, I should go through this real quick. Week one, Penn State win 33-7. Week two, they play Rutgers. They win 61-0. Week three, they play Pitt. They win by 43-21. Then Troy State actually plays them kind of close. Florida State plays them close, and then they just go on a tear where they blow out West Virginia, blow out Temple, blow out Syracuse, blow out Washington 65-7, and then two close games to end the season. So it would have been crazy seeing the ups and downs of that season.
Oh, 100%.
All right, so Mike, I'll let you go next.
So I'm going to go into – I have two of them. So the first one is the 2008 and 2009 Florida Gators. If you look at these rosters, you have in such an array of personalities. In 2008, they had Cam Newton backing up Tim Tebow. And obviously Cam Newton switched. But that's not even the best part. You have Tim Tebow, the Bible Christian, the saint that he is. God bless that man. Teaming up with Aaron Hernandez.
Who was was the other guy on that team? The receiver.
Oh, my God. They had Percy Harvin, I believe, too.
No, he played for the Cowboys, and I think, or the Eagles, and I think he dropped a racial slur.
Oh, I
know. Oh, you're right.
Riley Cooper.
Yeah, Riley Cooper.
Riley Cooper was also
on that team.
You also had the Pouncey twins who have been, like, pretty vocal about, like, free Aaron Hernandez, like.
Just imagine the insane things that were going to go on. You have Tim Tebow, who's probably leaving a Bible study, and they got, like, guys like Aaron Hernandez doing whatever the hell they want. Oh, my God. That would have been absolutely insane.
That is a good one.
I would be watching every second of that from the moment it comes out. I would binge it. There's no other way to do it. And the other one I have would be a post-Jerry Sandusky penalty at Penn State. So I believe ESPN already released like a quick 30 for 30 on this. And everyone knows the Sandusky scandal that happened at Penn State. The allegations, the penalties, the arrests, everything. Everyone knows all the details. But what I'm interested in as a Penn State fan is seeing how the players who stayed at Penn State, what their viewpoint was. Because the NCAA gave Penn State players the option to transfer wherever they wanted and be able to play immediately. So they wouldn't have to sit out a year because of the transfer rule. They would be able to transfer wherever they wanted and be eligible right away. And I would like to see what happens with these guys that ended up staying and the guys that stuck with their commitments to Penn State. I want to see their viewpoint, and then I want to loop it all around to like later episodes when you can see the Bill O'Brien come in, the Saquon come in, the James Franklin comes in, and how Penn State went from being almost given the death penalty to a top 10 team in the country. So I would be 100% interested in this. I believe you guys would as well. So I think it would be a great Last Dance series.
So mine kind of both of mine actually kind of piggyback on the Penn State one with sanctions. So my first one is the 2012 Ohio State team. They go undefeated. I believe that may have been Urban Meyer's first year there after his medical sickness made him leave Florida. They go 12-0. They can't go into bowl games because of sanctions that have been put on them by the NCAA. So I kind of want to watch them to see like the feel, like, you know, guys going week in, week out, knowing that there really is a ceiling for them. Like, they can't go any farther than the 12th game of the year. You can't go play in the Big Ten championship game. You can't go play in the NCAA championship game. The second one also is kind of like that, but the sanctions come on later, is one of the best runs in college football is that 03 to that 05 USC team. Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, you know, they win, I think, one or two national championship games, play in that all-time great game against Texas with Vince Young running into the end zone to end the game. They have the, you know, they win the Pac-12, all those games, and then later down the line, it all gets vacated. Reggie Bush loses a Heisman over it. So I'd like to see, you know, obviously follow that team through the success, you know, be in the locker room for that. And then once Pete Carroll leaves, and then once you get Lane Kiffin showing up, I think Lane Kiffin's first year there, they were still under sanction. So, you know, seeing how that kind of transpires, you know, how these coaches go on about recruiting with, you know, sitting down and telling a kid, listen, come to our school, we're a great program, but we can't play for a national championship game for 2 more years. And by that point, you're going to be a junior. Or, you know, we can't play for 3 years, so you might go through your whole college career never playing a national championship game. You know, those are the kind of stories that interest me, is being behind the scenes of those.
Oh, 100%. I would stick to watching that through and through. But one thing I'm thinking of right now, I would just want a series just following Mike Leach around. I don't know about you guys. I just want a series where the camera just follows him through his day-to-day, what he does at football, and just record whatever that man says.
Well, I mean, according to Leach, the way to beat the pandemic is to swing your sword. That's what he said. And we had one of our guests, Caleb Fossum, he ate lunch with Leach, like, all the time. He said he was just as interesting as you'd imagine. He was a celebrity lifeguard at some point in his life. Like,
sign me up for that series.
So, because you're talking about Leach, for anyone who hasn't watched HBO's 24/7 Access, they did kind of like Hard Knocks, but they did a different team every week. And they did do one with Washington State. And in just a week of following around Mike Leach, they had enough film pretty much to probably do the whole season. I mean, in 1 week, he talked about Pirates, Coyotes. He walks to work every day.
Isn't his walk to work like 6 miles or something?
Yeah, it's 3 miles there, 3 miles back. So, and I know Mike, I don't know if you watched it. They won with James Franklin, so that's something.
I did watch the one with Penn State. It was actually really good.
But so we kind of got like a little sneak peek of what we could get with Mike Leach, which, I mean, if you gave me 10 episodes of just you don't even need to show me football.
Just give me whatever that man Leach. They can make that, like, whatever Mike Leach says into like an SNL skit, and I'd watch it every second of the day. The crazy stuff that he says, if they can like act it out somehow, oh my god. Absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. But so we're going to slide into the last thing we're going to talk about. A lot of people, there's a lot of debates on what athlete could have came in and played well at a high level of football. So we're going to kind of put our input into it. We did make one rule where the obvious answer for a lot of people is LeBron James. So our rule was you had to keep LeBron James out of it. And the athlete we're choosing could not have played football at anything higher than high school level. So, for example, like one of my early picks was Frank Thomas, when I completely forgot that Frank Thomas actually did play at Auburn. I thought he just had an offer. I didn't realize he played football at Auburn. So, Mike, I'll let you start this one off, because I know you have a few.
So I had three of them, but just going off on what you said about Frank Thomas, I actually named Kyle Schwarber. He's an outfielder for the Chicago Cubs. He actually played football at the University of Indiana. I believe he was a fullback or a linebacker there. So he actually played a good amount of football there. I think he never played past his sophomore year to focus on baseball. But being a big baseball fan, I named two others. One being Aaron Judge. While in high school, Aaron Judge had scholarship offers, full ride offers to Washington, UCLA, Stanford, and Notre Dame. And in his senior season alone, he set school records with receptions, yards, and touchdowns with 54 catches for 969 yards and 17 touchdowns, which is absolutely insane for a kid in high school who's 17 years old. And the final one that I have is Mike Trout. I think Mike Trout's one of the most unbelievable athletes of our generation, and putting him in the backfield, just the build that he has, I believe he could run over a lot of linebackers in the NFL and in college.
So all three baseball players?
All three baseball players. I had to do it.
I like that, though. I mean, that's different because so mine is Denver Nuggets shooting guard Gary Harris. So he actually considered playing college football at Michigan State, and he set a bunch of high school records as well. I don't have them up in front of me. But for football offers, he had Michigan State, Purdue, Indiana, Kentucky, and Louisville. And he actually visited four of them for football.
That's pretty good. Some top schools there.
Yeah, I believe he was a receiver in high school. At 6'4", I mean, he probably could have made, like, I mean, at least a practice squad.
Oh, easily. Just with size alone.
So my two, I ended up thinking of one while we were talking about this. My first one is the Washington Wizards point guard, John Wall. John Wall has actually said that he wants to play football. He would back up Tom Brady. But John Wall is one of the fastest players in the NBA. So I think, you know, you put him maybe as a running back. Maybe you could run a system around him where he could be like a Lamar Jackson, probably throws as much as Lamar Jackson does. But my other one, when you think about football, a lot of it's running. And one of the best runners of all time, Usain Bolt. You put his speed out there, not many corners are going to keep up with him.
But would he only be able to run vertical routes, or would he be able
to cut? I know. Maybe he's just your four vertical threat.
You have to keep a safety 20 yards back. Like,
yeah.
That's a starting point.
That's funny.
I mean, I like that. There's a lot of that's different. Like sprinters who would be good in the NFL.
I was also thinking Brock Lesnar.
He actually played football.
Really? Yeah, he played football, yeah. He was with the Vikings.
What happened was he wrestled in college. He was an All-American. I forget where he was, but he was an All-American. He was an All-American heavyweight. Right out of – because the UFC wasn't a big thing at that time, so he went right to the WWE. And obviously the whole fallout with the WWE, goes back to UFC, has a stint there, and becomes champion in like a couple months while he's there, leaves the UFC back to the WWE, gets fed up with the WWE again, tries out for the Vikings, and is the last cut of the Vikings.
And he actually made the practice squad.
Yeah, he was the last cut for anyone. And he hasn't played football in, like they said, 8 years. And to be able to be the last cut possible and then make a practice squad is absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know he played football. So this is news to me. Also, your random Brock Lesnar knowledge right there was impressive. Dude,
I'm a WWE fan. I actually watched the documentary about him.
I mean, you just knew everything. Like, off the top of your head, you're like, no, what happened?
It was on FS1. They were doing, like, a WWE, like, they do a couple things a week that I was watching. It was actually pretty interesting. They had, they had Dwayne The Rock Johnson. They talked about him. They had Stone Cold. Because Stone Cold probably could have played in college football, too. Now I'm thinking about it. He probably could have played a good D-line.
Well, didn't The Rock play college football?
Yeah, The Rock played at
Miami.
Was he on that 2000
team? He was not. He graduated before then.
No. I think he was there with Coach O, though.
He might have been.
That's why they're boys.
Yeah. So one of my other ones who I ended up throwing out, my first thought originally, was Shaq. Like a young Shaq. But then I thought 7 foot, there's really nowhere to put him on the field. Like, my guys aren't
You put him right up the middle. There's nowhere to go around him. Talk about Vince Wilfork with, like, 7 more inches on him.
Yeah, my two are a little more realistic options. I mean, Usain Bolt's tall, too, so he's kind of like a Calvin Johnson.
He's probably, like, 6'2", 6'3", probably a little taller. Yeah.
No, he's, like, 6'5".
Jeez. Got some height on him, too?
Yeah, Usain Bolt's 6'5".
See if he's got some hands, though. Because whenever I think of people saying Usain Bolt should play in the NFL or something...
I just looked up Usain Bolt's 40 time, and they think that he would run a 4.2.
That is monstrous.
So at 6'5", running a 4.2.
He's going to have to bulk up a little bit to take a couple shots, though, unless he just runs by everyone. Could you imagine him taking, like, an end around?
He's 200. He's 210 pounds.
Yeah, but it's 6'5"?
Yeah.
6'4", 210 pounds? That's skinny. You gotta put something on you. It's like that's like a young Randy Moss, like that build. I'm talking about not like the talent wise. I'm talking about
10 to 15 pounds. Actually, it's almost the same weight as Randy Moss. All right, so we're gonna get into the last thing we have. We have an interview with Drew Snyder. He's a writer for Clemson, Kansas State, and Purdue. John had him on earlier in the week, so we're gonna jump into that, and then we're gonna wrap it all up. So we'll catch you guys on the other side of Drew Snyder.
All right, so now we welcome on Drew Snyder. He's a writer for SB Nation. He currently writes for Hammer and Rails, Shake in the South, and Bring on the Cats. Drew, welcome on.
Thanks. Good to be here.
All right. So I don't want to jump right into like football stuff. So I just want to talk about how did you get started writing for SB Nation?
Well, you know, it was I was in grad school at Texas A&M, and I've been following Purdue football actually. For my dad went to Purdue, so I was sort of brainwashed as a young child into a life of pain as a Purdue football fan, and I saw that Hammer and Rails was looking for a writer, so I just sort of sent my stuff in. I have an English major from Clemson, and you know, I've played sports and written about stuff my whole life. So Travis liked my stuff, and then and I started doing that, and then there was an opening at the Clemson site, and I sent in my stuff, and they liked it, and so I picked up a little work there, and then I moved to Manhattan, Kansas, and so I figured, what the hell, Kansas State is right in town. It'd actually be kind of nice to write about a school that I actually, where I actually live in the town. So I sent my stuff over to John Morse, and he liked it, so picked up a little work there, so I kind of have my finger in all kinds of different pies right now as far as college sports goes.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, like, one of the best teams in the country, probably, I'd say, an up-and-coming team in Purdue. You have thoughts about that, but, and then Kansas State with, like, a head coach that's a proven winner, but a program that really doesn't know much outside of Bill Snyder.
Right. No, it's been an interesting sort of juggling those three fan bases where, you know, Purdue or Clemson, you're like, all right, sweet, everything's great. It's really hard to say bad stuff. And then, you know, you go to Purdue and, you know, they were down when I first started writing for Purdue. That was over under Hazel, and they were just so bad. And sort of to see that transition from Hazel to Brum has been sort of a neat to be a part of. And then, yeah, with the K-State stuff, I was right there for the, you know, the first year I started writing, it was for Snyder, and nobody knew what was going on with him or if he was going to leave or stay. So I got to sort of cover that. And the and then the coaching change, you know, the whole coaching search that ended up with Chris Kleiman in Manhattan. So it's been an interesting time for writing for SB Nation.
Yeah, I mean, so that's pretty cool. I mean, I just want to make a quick comment about how you said you were brought into a life of pain being a Purdue fan. So I grew up probably 20 minutes away from Rutgers, so that's where my allegiance kind of lies. So I know real pain.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I want to know this. My uncle used to be the offensive line coach for Rutgers.
Really? Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. No, he was actually also the offensive line coach at Indiana and Kansas State. So I can sort of follow him around.
All right, that's pretty cool. All right, so I want your opinion on something here. If you had to pick a recruit from each of the three schools that you follow that you would say are underrated at the moment, for Clemson this might be kind of hard because, you know, they're all probably properly rated very highly.
Right. But,
yeah, who would you say, like, the underrated guys that are currently about to come into your schools?
All right, so for Purdue, so if we're talking the 2020 class, for Purdue, I really like the center they're bringing in, Gus Hartwig. He's not super underrated. You know, he's ended up being a four-star recruit by the end of the day. But I think he's a guy for Purdue that you're going to see come in and play, possibly take a starting job on the offensive line as a true freshman. So he's a guy I really like out of that Purdue class. I'll give you another one that is going to be really fun to watch is Marcellus Moore. He's one of the fastest. He'll be one of the fastest players in the nation. He's out of Illinois, but he's tiny. He's like 5'7". 247 has him at 5'7", 150, and he's probably not much bigger than that. But the kid can fly. He tore it up for Purdue during track season this year, he'll be a guy to watch Jeff Brohm really try to integrate into the offense. Let's talk a little about Kansas State. They've got a couple other interesting players coming in. Deuce Vaughn is an all-purpose back they signed out of Texas. He's a sort of a mid three-star guy. He's another really small, fast guy, 5'6", 5'7", 170 maybe. But he's a guy you're going to see sort of play that third down back role for the Wildcats. Another sort of small, fast guy. One of these two guys is going to play is Keon Mosey out of Missouri, at least Summit North. He is another small 5'7", 5'8", running back that just flies. Again, he had one of the fastest 40 times at the opening combine. And you sort of saw him put up that time and think it wasn't going to hold up, but it held up. Is probably one of the top five times in the nation. It is just so small that, you know, it doesn't sort of slid under the radar. So those two guys I really like as sort of a change of pace at Kansas State. I think you'll definitely see one of those two. As far as Clemson, like you said, it's sort of hard to say, this guy is underrated because everybody's pretty good. But they do have an interesting player named Aju Aju. He's Canadian, and he's sort of kind of new to football. He's a freak athlete, probably remind people physically of like Mike Williams. He's coming in as 18-year-old at around 6'3", 6'4", 220, 225 pounds, and he can go up and climb the ladder and get the ball. You probably won't see him right away. With the talent level there, but he's somebody to sort of keep an eye on long term as a guy that Clemson was really excited to get in to develop because he just had such incredible physical skills. Another underrated guy is Tyler Venables. That name sounds familiar.
Yeah.
He's coming out of Daniel High School, which has been really good to Clemson. Daniel's just right down the road from the campus, and it's provided Clemson with just some incredible players. That's where like Nuke Hopkins went, and Tyler's older brother Jake, and all the Sweeney kids, and a couple other defensive tackles. That's where Shaq Lawson went. So that school just pumps out. It's a tiny little rural school right up in South Carolina that is just consistently pumped out these talented players. So Tyler's a guy, he'll redshirt. He played quarterback at Daniel, but Clemson's got a way of getting these sort of sneaky, smart guys out on the field where you're looking at, you know, a team full of five-star guys, and then you've got like the guy that made the final interception against Ohio State, Turner. He was nobody. He was a no-star kid coming out of Alabama. He came to Clemson because Dabo was really good friends with his dad. Nolan Turner's dad played professional football and played with Dabo in Alabama. And, you know, nobody – he coming into Clemson, nobody was talking about him. And he made one of the biggest plays of the year last year to end the Ohio State game. So, that's one thing that Clemson does really well is they sort of find these guys that – and of course, it's easier to do that when you're hitting everywhere else. You can sort of bring these guys in and find a spot for them. And so that's those would be the guys that I'm sort of interested in as far as underrated coming into those three schools.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've heard of a few of those. I'm not going to share like who I think is underrated because that's probably just boring. You probably know more about it than I do. But so did you see the story about Clemson spending $85,000 on one recruiting weekend?
Sounds right. Yeah. That's probably not unusual. If that was probably either their cookout weekend or their junior day, those are the two big recruiting days that Clemson brings in the best talent from all over and sort of puts on the best show for them. That's sort of what Dabo's does.
Yeah, so that's what I was just wondering. I was wondering, like, since you're more probably in touch with how much, like, Clemson normally does, is that, like, out of the ordinary, or is that, like, a normal, like, kind of thing for them?
It's out of the ordinary, as in they don't do it. Like, that's not an every weekend thing. Those would be, you know, like I said, they have two just really big events with their cookout. They're all in cookout and their junior day, where that's where they just bring everybody in. And try to really, it's one of the things they've done really well is try to bring all these recruits together and then help have them basically recruit each other to Clemson. So you get a lot of like, and having events like that helps that sort of that recruiting class sort of come together and see everybody at the same time. And so everybody gets to sort of talk, oh, I'm coming. What do you think? You want to come? This will be great. We can hang out. And it's been really effective, especially the cookout has just netted recruit after recruit.
All right. Cool. Yeah. So the 11 visitors for, and then we'll move on from this, was Brian Breesy, Justin Flo, Miles Murphy, DeMarcus Bowman, EJ Williams, Mitchell Mays, Sergio Allen, and Tyler Venables and Kevin Swint. So it looks like it was one of their big weekends because, I mean, there's a lot of highly ranked guys there.
Right, and then you see Brian Breesy's, Clemson, yep. Miles Murphy's at Clemson now, EJ Williams is at Clemson, Kevin Swint's at Clemson, you know, obviously Venables is there, Bowman's at Clemson now. So
the only one they really missed on was Justin Flo, who went to my second favorite team, Oregon.
Yeah, you know, Flo was high on everybody's list. That kid's an athletic freak, and he hits like a truck. But, you know, it's tough to go out that far west, and Clemson's been doing a little better job of it here recently. And so he's the one they really missed on. But then very late in the game, they brought in five-star Trenton Simpson to really sort of take that spot, an outside linebacker.
Yeah. All right, so to move off of Clemson now, we'll shift over back to Purdue. After I read Tyler Trent's book, I can't think of the name of it right now, but it was like a life-changing book for me. It really shed, because I'm only 20, like I said, it showed like a lot of perspective, and like I feel like things that you don't really think about as a 20-year-old that he had to think about. And I know you said you had some stories about him, so do you want to share some of those? Or?
Sure, no, I'll talk a little bit about Tyler. So I'm not gonna like say, oh, I'm friends with Tyler. I didn't know time. Old. I'm significant. I'm 37. Oh my God, I'm 38. but I knew Tyler. I messaged back and forth with him, on Twitter from DMs, because he actually before, Tyler Trent became sort of the big national story. He was just this really cool story, a local story at Purdue. This kid that came in. Basically as the bionic man, and he had all kinds of different spare parts from that terrible osteosarcoma cancer he'd fought, most of his life. And, but, he was he would have made a really good sports writer. He was excellent. He was such a convivial guy. And I sort of, DM with him every now and then. He'd do a story, and I was trying to work something out with him. We were going to do maybe a little story together. When he went out, when he had that relapse, that final relapse of his cancer, and man, when that happened, that was just devastating. Because you'd seen him, the season before, he was at all the football games at the stands, and he was going to all the basketball games with his press passes, and so when that happened, one thing I know about Tyler, which is he loves sports, man. He was just all about that. And so I am friends with the sports information director at Kansas State, and he's a really good guy, Kenny Lanau. And Kenny, I asked Kenny if he could talk to Coach Snyder and have Coach Snyder send Tyler something, just some positive words and like a picture or something like that. And Coach Snyder's known for being just very generous with his time. And, within a week, he had mailed Tyler out, a nice handwritten card, thinking of you, praying for you. So it was nice to be able to surprise Tyler with that. And then after that, I thought, well, I bet he'd like some other coaches, because he was so appreciative of getting that from Coach Snyder. So I emailed Dabo, because I know Dabo does a lot of work like this. Work like that. He really reaches out in the community and does a lot of stuff sort of behind the scenes. And I sent him an email and, sort of explained the situation. And this is before anybody knew who Tyler really was. And I said, I think he'd really love it if you could send him something. And again, these college coaches with so much on their plate and never met the kid. And Dabo, within that week, sent him out, a nice card, picture, with a nice little message on it. And what's really cool about that is eventually Dabo and Tyler Trent became pretty good close friends. And if you watch where after Clemson wins the national championship and goes to the White House, a good bit of Dabo's speech, he sort of talks about Tyler and what Tyler sort of meant to him. So, well, I played a very tiny, tiny, insignificant, like, walk-on role in that whole story. I thought that was always kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that video. Can you send it to me after we're done recording?
Sure.
All right, cool. All right, so one thing I want to talk about, lighter note, because that's a real, like, sad topic, is, so have you ever heard, like, don't use names here because I don't want to slander anyone, but like a story about like on a bad like, recruiting trip gone bad or like anything a coach like kind of like did to piss someone off, like, because I have something to share with you, but
I've seen some bad recruiting trips. When I was at Clemson, that was during the Tommy Bowden era, I lived with some football players and they were hosting recruits, and sometimes that did not go well, or sometimes the guy showed up and you're like, ooh, boy, I'm going to make sure all my stuff's locked up. and, you know, a couple of that times that happened where the guy actually signed someplace else. And then before he even, I think, made it to that school, he got arrested for stealing computers out of the computer lab there, I think. But as far as just coaching stuff, not particularly. I do think that occasionally you'll get a head coach or a position coach that just rubs somebody the wrong way, doesn't really connect with them. And so sometimes you have a guy, you know, come in excited to go to school and leave. And I've heard of a couple of situations like that where they come in and they're excited and then they leave and they're like, I don't think this is for me. So it's always sort of a fine line, and that's sort of, you know, that's the thing with recruiting, sort of live and die by 17 and 18 year olds.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. It's just so weird, especially the position coach thing. I believe it was the wide receiver coach at Oregon this year. He took a job, I believe, at Arizona State, and then DMs leaked of him, like, trashing the whole, like, Oregon coaching staff, and, like, that's just a bad look. Like, that makes, like, other schools probably not want to hire you in the future. Like,
yeah, no, that's a terrible look. And the coaching community is so tight-knit that, that doesn't go unnoticed. So he better do well at his current job because it might be hard for him to find the next one. Yeah.
Also, so we had Mike Farrell on. You might know who he is. He's like the director of recruiting for Rivals.
Right.
And he was telling us some stories. And apparently there was a Pac-12 coach. I think I know who it is, but I'm not going to say that he fell asleep at the kid's house and didn't even give his recruiting pitch.
Oh, so, man.
I don't know how boring of a visit that must have been for the kid. Like, hey, mama, is coach up? And he's like, ah, no, he's still sleeping on the couch.
Is he okay? One thing I will say is I don't think a lot of people appreciate just how much work goes into being a coach. That dude probably been on the road for like 5 or 6 days and like from town to town, car to car. And, but you do, there is a funny story about Drew Brees, how Drew Brees ended up at Purdue.
Oh, let's hear it.
Apparently he was, A&M was recruiting him, and R.C. Slocum put him on hold. I believe it was Coach Slocum, and never got back to him. and so he said, I may be butchering the story, but it's out there. You can sort of find it. It's been told several times before, but yeah, that's how Breeze sort of got mad and decided to, forget that. I'm going to Purdue, and Purdue wants me. And so that's how, Purdue football turned around with a bad Texas A&M phone call.
Yeah. So there was one more story that I wanted to include, cause this one was just, it was the two coaches were walking behind the kid and his family, and the kid had a highly ranked teammate. So they were recruiting the teammate more than they were recruiting the kid they were actually with. And, the kid overheard the coach saying that they didn't really want him. So that probably went pretty poorly.
Ouch. Yeah. And, that's something that Clemson had to deal with a couple years ago. It was sort of a big story. I don't remember where Robert Kimdichie had committed to Clemson. And he was out of Grayson High School in Georgia. And he had a couple teammates with him. One of them was Wayne Gallman, who ended up being, I think it was Wayne, who ended up being, you know, Clemson, the starting running back. And another one was Ryan Carter. And now Carter, people probably don't remember him as much. He was a low sort of two-star kid. And people really thought that they were bringing in, you know, Carter as this to get Kim Dichie. And there was a national writer who I won't mention right now because he's reformed. For foreigners, ways it just basically came out and wrote this terrible article on national news about how this poor high school kid Ryan Carter wasn't good enough to play at Clemson. But Clemson was recruiting him because they wanted to get his teammate, and how that was just. And it turns out Ryan Carter had a great career at Clemson. He came in and you know, he started the national championship game as our slot corner. And so, you know, you got to be careful about those sort of things. And I also, that's something I guess people sometimes forget is these are kids, man. I used to be a high school coach back in my, you know, not the football, I coached basketball and soccer. But, you know, it's hard. It's easier to remember, forget that, like, these are like 17, 18-year-old kids coming in. And this is their dream. Like, they've worked their entire life to get to this like level, and to have, you know, somebody say, oh, well, they're, you know, just not good enough, or that's, you know, that's big for them. So, be careful, keep that in mind when you're dealing with recruits and recruiting that, these are kids, you know, I can only imagine, what I would be like at 17 or 18 with, you know, a bunch of grown men sort of talking about me and my faults and what I was going to do and my family and all that sort of stuff. So,
So another thing I wanted to touch on quick was that, so we used to have Bill Schneider watch, and it was, cause I think his facial expressions are the best, maybe because he's old. I don't know, but whenever like Kansas State had a kickoff return or like a huge play, I'd wait for the pan to Bill Schneider. I always thought they were great, but, he's a national treasure. I wish he was still coaching, but I mean, he is up there in age. And from what I heard, like, he was Kansas State, like, had like a love-hate relationship with him at the end.
Yeah, at the very end, it was always love. So, it was always love at the end. Like, it was just a question of when he was going to leave. And I think the fan base started getting restless. Recruiting started to slip. His way of doing things started to sort of fall apart a little bit, just in the modern day where recruiting's so important. And that final year was just sort of awkward because he had a new offensive coordinator, but, you know, Bill's known as an offensive genius. And there was two quarterbacks on the team, Skylar Thompson, and I'm going to forget the other guy's kid's name. One of them, the other kid was end up transferring to TCU. But he was the starting quarterback the year before, and he was like a read option guy. And Skylar is more of an aired out with, you know, throwing the ball. And you would watch the press conferences, and it was like a fight between the offensive coordinator and Bill about who was going to play quarterback and what the offense was going to be like. And it was pretty awkward to watch. And you'd, you know, sometimes you saw Bill really compliment the guy he wanted and then sort of not say anything about the other kid. And so I think at the end, it had run its course because that was his second stint, if everybody, at Manhattan, after he came and saved the Wildcats from the Ron Prince experience.
Which is going awful where he is now.
That's like, around Manhattan, that name alone just draws people's ire. Like, they still, after this day, do not like that man. Like, all of it was an old timer, Ron Prince. Oh, my God, he was such an... apparently, he was just a jerk, and I guess that's sort of the reputation that's followed him around.
Oh, wait, well, do you not know what's going on right now with him?
Yeah, or... yeah, didn't he get... He was at... I can't remember which smaller school he was at, but he got canned for being abusive, right?
Yeah, he... Well, I think... No, I don't think he got canned. I think he probably should have been canned. No, yeah, they didn't can him yet. But they're probably going to. He was apparently verbally abusive and intimidating the players. And I don't know if Cam Newton's brother just transferred to Auburn because he said like he hates him. Like,
yeah, he hates, no, that coach. That is not an unusual response to Ron Prince, from my understanding. So, you know, sometimes apparently he's a pretty good at what he does coaching wise, but just personality wise is not a fun person to work with.
Yeah. All right. So just one last thing that I want to talk about quick is, do you ever write about like the Jayhawk League?
The JUCOs, West Kansas. I don't really write about them, but you know, covering Kansas State recruiting, I do. You know, that's one of the big pipelines, in that sort of what Bill Snyder made his career on, is bringing those guys in from the Jayhawk League. So yeah, I know a little bit about those guys.
All right. Well, this is just a light topic to end on. Was I tried to buy Jason Brown's hot tub. This is a funny story. So he followed us on Twitter, and then obviously a few months later he gets canned at Indy, and he posts a picture of the hot tub that he's always in the last chance you smoking cigars, and he said, DM me if interested. So I was like, all right. I mean, if it's like not worth a lot, it'll be funny. You'll get a lot of retweets if I buy it. I believe he wanted $10,000 for the hot tub.
Oof. Oh man,
for a used hot tub.
Who knows what's in that hot tub too, bro? That was, yeah, that would be you need a lot of bleach to get that thing ready to go.
Yeah,
but and yeah, the kicker
I had to come pick it up as well.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say. I don't know if you've ever been out to West Kansas, because I drive out to Denver sometimes to go hiking and hang out with some of my friends that live out there. There is nothing out there. It is desolate. Like, you get past like Wichita, mm-hmm. and it's like flat, and all you see in the distance are these flashing lights from the windmills, from the wind turbines. And especially if you drive it at night, it's like you get like mesmerized by it, and you like pull off and like clear your head because all these lights start flashing in like different patterns. But there's nothing out there. I thought tumbleweeds were a myth. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, oh, that's something you see on like Wile E. Coyote cartoons, until like driving out to Denver and they're just flying across the road. So yeah, out there in the Jayhawk League, man, you gotta want it. You gotta want it bad, because that's some tough land and some tough playing conditions out there. I don't think anybody goes out there voluntarily, unless you want to farm some stuff, or put up windmills,
or buy like a real expensive hot tub.
Buy a real expensive hot tub, a $10,000 hot tub that was on TV.
Yeah,
probably wasn't even gonna be the same hot tub.
Yeah, right. All right, so I think that, just last little tidbit here, and then we'll end off, because this is supposed to be around 25 minutes, so that this works pretty nicely. I did actually want to apply to Wichita State out of high school in New Jersey, like I said, but Ron Baker and Fred Van Fleet were like my guys. And then I realized Wichita State was mostly an agricultural school, and I was like, I've never been on a farm. I know nothing about farming.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been some serious culture shock headed out there to see Greg Marshall coach. And speaking of people with sometimes sour personalities, I think that's Greg's MO as well. I don't know if you've seen what's happened to the Wichita State team from last year, but they're pretty much gone.
Yeah, the entire team, right?
Yeah, he just dropped the bomb on that team and is just restock the whole team with JUCOs again. So he's an interesting sort of coaching vagabond, where you're like, why is he still out at Wichita? I think he's got some personality quirks, because he's from South Carolina actually. So we talk every time a Clemson or a South Carolina job opening comes up, his the first name on the list, and everybody sort of goes, yeah, I don't know. maybe not.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Drew. We look for, hopefully we'll have you back maybe sometime over the summer. There's not much else to do now. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, man. Anytime. I'm, always happy to talk. That's what I do. So yeah, just holler at me.
All right, cool. Thanks.
No problem.
All right, guys. So that was Drew Snyder. Like I said, he's a writer for Clemson, Kansas State, and Purdue. That's going to wrap up this week's episode. Hopefully the next time we talk, we have some more insight on the start date for the season. We have a little more, clear steps, the schools are going to have to take. Hopefully we get college football back. It seems to be everyone's hope that we're hitting with. Keep checking the WordPress for any articles that me, John, or Mike throw out there. I know we have a couple coming in the next few days. But until next time, guys, stay safe, everyone. Remain inside if you have to. And see you guys next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yep.